From NPR and Chicago Public Radio, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Cassel, and here's your host at the Chase Auditorium in downtown Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you so much. Thank you. You are too kind. Great show for you today. John Hodgman of The Daily Show and his PC and those ads for Apple. He'll be joining us later to play Not My Job. But first, well, this is it. You know, we have been talking about the presidential campaign for 2 years now. It is almost over. And I know. But no, like more people than would admit this, we are going to miss it. It's like we've been enjoying this fabulous television series that's coming to an end. It's like the end of Seinfeld or The Sopranos or MASH. And how will it end? My guess is that it goes to black and then Hillary wakes up next to Bill Clinton and says, "I just had the worst dream." But we still have a few days left, so call us up, answer some questions about this week's news. The number, 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. It's time to welcome our first listener contestant. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Alexandra Zulazo-Kessler calling from Baltimore, Maryland.
Hey, how are you?
I'm good, thank you.
How are things in the Charm City?
Good. I'm an animal trainer at the National Aquarium.
Cool.
Wait, no. Does that mean you get to do those great, like, shows with the herring? And the bonefish in which they just swim aimlessly about at your command?
Sort of. I get to train the parrots and the lizards, and we do little presentations with them.
You have parrots and lizards at the aquarium?
Yes.
Do they...
That seems like coloring outside the line.
It's all about...
They use flotation devices.
Okay. You teach them to swim. I get it. Well, Alexandra, welcome to the show. Let me introduce you to our panel this week. First, say hello to writer and comedian Paul Prevenza. He's
hello,
right there.
Alexandra.
Hi, Paul.
How are you?
Next, say hello to the woman behind the syndicated advice column Ask Amy and the author of the forthcoming memoir, The Mighty Queens of Freeville, Ms. Amy Dickinson, right there.
Hey, Alexandra.
And lastly, say hello to comedian Paula Poundstone. Alexandra, welcome to our show. You're going to start us off with Who's Carl This Time. Carl Cassel, of course, will recreate for you three quotations from the week's news. Your job, correctly identify or explain just two of them. Do that, you'll win our prize. Carl Cassel's voice on your home answering machine. Ready to go?
I am ready.
All right. Here's your first quote.
I half expect to look over and see Karo syrup dripping down the screen.
That was Mark Hemingway of the Conservative National Review. He was reacting with some distaste to an infomercial shown Wednesday night. So who might have turned on the treacle spigots a little much during his primetime ad?
That would be Barack Obama.
It would be Barack Obama. Call it the Obama infomercial or the Obamercial or maybe Obama Knows Best, whatever it was. With its visits with four struggling families and its cheerful, uplifting music and tone, it seemed like a cross between the Oprah Winfrey Show and a Cialis ad. You half expected to see Barack Obama, you know, showing one of the struggling dads how to throw a football through a tire swing, you know? We were wondering how it could have been a little better, you know? So we decided to go to an expert. We now welcome Larry Nussbaum, the CEO of Ronco. That's the company founded by Ron Popeil, pioneer in the field of infomercials for such great things as the Pocket Fisherman, spray-on hair. Mr. Nussbaum, welcome to Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Oh, thanks. Great to be here.
Terrific. So let me ask you. I saw it. It was okay. I'm sure it served its purpose. But how could Obama have jazzed it up somehow? Should he have done, for example, a demonstration of some kind?
Yeah, why didn't he take a Ginsu knife and just go through maybe a puppet of John McCain or use a sledgehammer and cut taxes?
Exactly. I mean, exactly. He should have, like, had, like, the taxes for the middle class in front of them with the Ginsu. And it would have been chop, 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 chop. And then he still could have cut the tomato.
He should have said, but that's not all.
Right.
Exactly.
At no additional cost, we will give you, as our gift to you, Joe Biden, ladies and gentlemen, Joe Biden. A presidential value, Joe Biden, free of charge.
But, and also, isn't it helpful to have like a before and after? Like, you know, when you're buying one of these clothes, like, yeah, you
so
want
So, like,
the,
you first you show America, and America is kind of poorly lit and bloated and wearing bad clothes.
Yeah.
And then, after the Obama administration, you show America, and it's like the hair's been done. It's all muscular and oiled, America
It's standing on the beach,
It is running slowly on the beach.
Right.
And America's got all of a sudden a really cute girlfriend out of nowhere.
Exactly.
Wow.
But let me ask you this. As a professional, what was your verdict on Obama's infomercial? Good or could have been better?
It could have been a lot better. I think he had great flair and charisma, but where's the answer? And I love your approach to before and after, because isn't that what the problem-solution issue is all about? We give you a Showtime rotisserie spray on hair. You're bald. You want hair. You've got no teeth. You want teeth.
All right, well, let me ask you this. What was your excuse for the in-the-shell egg scrambler, huh? Explain that one to me.
Hey. Larry Nussbaum is the CEO of Ronco, a master of the infomercial. Larry, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Why do I feel that it's to Obama's credit that he can't sell his presidency as well as you could sell the Salad Master?
If only he could. All right. Alexandra, you still with us?
I'm still here.
All right. Now, I want everybody to brace themselves, because Carl is going to call Governor Sarah Palin some unpleasant names. Carl?
Diva, rogue, whack job.
Now, Governor Palin has endured more than her share of criticism this election cycle, but what's interesting here is that the people who were calling her those names come from where?
McCain's campaign aides.
Exactly right. McCain's campaign aides. Everybody knows about the rats jumping a sinking ship. What we haven't seen before is rats leaking insults to the press about the other rats. As the McCain campaign lags in the polls days before the election, the senior aides have decided on a new last-minute strategy, blaming Palin. Since Palin was throwing campaign aides under the bus for the whole $150,000 wardrobe thing, anonymous McCain loyalists retaliated by calling up journalists and telling stories about her strange, quote, rogue behavior. Why, she's not doing what she's told. She's wandering off the reservation like a maverick.
Have you noticed, in my conversations with you, it's only my men friends that have defended the money for the clothes.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Well, every man I've spoken to, I said, well, yes, but it takes a lot of money and it's harder for women because they have to look. I got to tell you something. How many days between the convention and when she was first appointed, right, to the election day?
Yeah.
And it wasn't 150. If you can't dress yourself for $1,000 a day, please don't go anywhere near the national budget.
And once again, I say to the voting public, now how much would you pay?
All right. Alexandria, we have one more question for you. Here is your last quote.
Cheese steaks on the house.
That was sports writer Ben Walker announcing the championship won by what team this week?
The Phillies.
The Philadelphia Phillies. Exactly right. The first professional sports franchise in history to record 10,000 losses made it all seem worthwhile. The series was unusual in two ways. First, because of their opponent, the Tampa Bay Rays, a team of youngsters that just last year was playing in the Florida Gulf Coast Little League. Amazing how far they've come. And second, by the 46-hour rain delay in the middle of Game 5, that was fine, though, as it gave restive Philly fans a chance to scout out cars to overturn in the case of a win. Carl, how did Alexandra do?
Alexandra's a winner, Peter. That's because she had three correct answers.
Well done. Thank you so much, Alexandra, for playing, and congratulations.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
Bye-bye. Right now, panel, time for you to answer some questions about the week's news. Back to the campaign trail. Paul,
yes,
we've got some good news for the McCain campaign.
I don't believe that.
While most polls show he's behind, McCain has something that other winning campaigns in the past have had, most particularly Jimmy Carter, Bill Clinton, and even George W. Bush all had this, and McCain's got it too. What?
Smile?
No.
What does he have that aside from a huge recession.
If McCain wins, look, and within 6 to 8 months, look for Joe McCain brand beer.
Oh, a crazy brother.
A crazy
yes,
brother.
Of course.
America?
Of course.
Meet Joe McCain, John's younger, even less stable brother. He's worked for McCain's campaigns off and on, and he got in the news just this
right.
month when he called Northern Virginia, he called it, quote, communist country. But then last week he called 911 to complain about traffic. And the operator asked, quote, sir, are you calling 911 to complain about traffic? And he swore at the operator and hung up. And
it
turns out they record.
It gets better, though.
What happened then?
They called him back.
And they said, you're not supposed to call 911 to complain about traffic.
Yeah, he's awesome. And where has he been this whole time?
He could have been providing comic relief all these last 2 years.
How did they manage to hide him?
He's been stuck in traffic.
So frankly, at emergency level.
Yeah.
I think you've been stuck in traffic for 2 years. You should call 911.
Right now, it's time for the Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me Bluff the Listener game. Call 1-888-WAIT-WAIT to play our game on the air. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hey, how's it going? This is Caleb Hansen from Burlington, Vermont.
Hey, Caleb. That's a great old-fashioned name.
Well, thank you.
And you live in Vermont. It's a great old-fashioned Vermont name. I imagine you wearing flannel and carrying an axe over your shoulder, but only for benign purposes.
Pretty much, it's actually just for show, really.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, welcome to our show, Caleb.
Thank you.
You're going to play our game in which you must try to tell truth from fiction. Carl, what is Caleb's topic?
Heck of a job, Brownie.
Responding to natural disasters, we now know, isn't all that simple. So we were delighted this week to read about some bold new ways people are planning to respond when that siren goes off. Our panelists are going to tell you 3 stories about new strategies for dealing with disasters. Choose the real story. You'll win a Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me outfitted FEMA trailer complete with Carl's voice on the home answering machine. All right. First, let's hear from Paul Prevenza.
The flooding in northern India shocked the world, with lives lost, homes demolished, and crops destroyed, and thousands left struggling to survive. I watched the newscasts and thought, what can I do to help, said Karen Evanauskas, spokesmodel and vice president at Avon Products. I can't clean the water, I can't build a house, I'm not a farmer, I can't stop disasters from occurring, but what I can do is make the aftermath less ugly. Evanauskas flew to northern India with cases of Avon products and a team of Avon entrepreneurs ready to eradicate the physical toll the floods have taken on the victims. When people look good, they feel good, she said. A disaster is no reason not to try to look your best. Flood victim Sajila Patel said, the flood has taken everything, but now at least I feel attractive. It is amazing how much joy moisturizing can bring.
Makeup for flood victims in India. Your next story of a new approach to a crisis comes from Amy Dickinson.
It's official. New York City is now not only the Big Apple, but also the host city for the world's largest population of Simex lectularius. That's bed bug to you and me. After being embarrassed by news stories about grossed out hotel visitors finding the little critters in their luggage and their trousers, New Yorkers decided they aren't going to take their infestation lying down. They're embracing bed bugs as being as New York as the Empire State Building or the Rockettes with many, many, many more legs. Starting Monday, the I Love New York advertising campaign will feature a rendering of a bed bug squished under the heels of notable New Yorkers. Among them, Mayor Bloomberg, Elaine Stritch, and Christie Brinkley, who says seductively, excuse me, bed bug, but I'd rather sleep alone.
New York, taking on the bed bug infestation head on. And your last story of disaster management comes from Paula Poundstone.
Certain words depress people or make them feel not so chipper. And those words are not so helpful when invoked during a disaster or a time when things are not going as well as we might like. A report by the Drought Policy Review Expert Social Panel in Australia found, for example, that words like drought have bad connotations for farm families and recommends that there be a new approach to living with dryness, as they prefer to call it, rather than dealing with drought. The drought, or unmoist period, has gripped the area for 7 years, or groups of 365 days, with no end in sight. If farmers could only see it as a boon to the dried fruit industry, they'd be a lot better off. Panel Chairman Peter Kenny says that the enduring dryness has caused many to blow their brains out, or take an extended break, or make more room for others, or teach children the danger of guns.
All right, here are your choices. From Paul Avon products being sent to give people makeovers in flood-ravaged India. From Amy Dickinson, bed bugs in New York become the basis of a new ad campaign. Or from Paula Poundstone, the story of how they're solving droughts in Australia by not calling them droughts anymore. Which of these is the real story of disaster management in the news?
I'm waiting for the fourth option. I'm hoping that one's going to be better. you know, being a big fan of the power of semantics, I'm going to have to go with Paula's story.
Right, but in Australia, they're just not going to call it a drought anymore, and we will all feel better.
Yeah, you know, and also periods of dryness. It sounds like some kind of medical euphemism that they would have on TV commercials, so right. I'm going to go with that one.
All right, that's your choice. Paula's story. Well, we spoke to an expert on this topic to get their opinion.
The National Drought Mitigation Center would never consider using the word dryness in our title, although some people in the United States do call drought the D word in order to avoid some of its negative implications.
That was Michael Hayes, director of the National Drought Mitigation Center, explaining why he would not consider changing the name to National Dryness Mitigation Center. You were right, Caleb. Very well done.
All right, great.
You earned a point for Paula. You have won our prize. Carl Castle will record the greeting on your home answering machine. Thank you so much for playing with us.
Well, thank you so much. I love the show.
Oh, thank you. Bye-bye.
You got to accentuate positive elim. Mine hit the negative and latch on to the affirmative. Don't mess with Mr.
And now the game where we ask people questions about things they know nothing about. Now, you may recognize John Hodgman as the anthropomorphic PC in those Apple ads. He is also the resident expert for The Daily Show with Jon Stewart. He has just written his second compendium of all world knowledge, more information than you require. We are honored to have him with us now. John Hodgman, welcome to Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Thank you for having me.
Now, this is your second book of all world knowledge.
Yes, my first book of complete world knowledge, it turns out, was not complete.
Yes. You suckered us with that one.
And for example, it had nothing on the subject of my becoming a famous minor television person.
Well, that's exciting, actually. I wanted to talk to you about that because that's happened since the publication of your last book.
Yes,
That you become the resident expert on Jon Stewart's show, The Daily Show.
Quite by accident.
Mm-hmm. And you have also, and this is how most people might know you who haven't read your books, you are, of course, the PC in those ubiquitous ads in which there is a guy saying, I'm a PC, I'm a Mac, and you then go on to bicker in amusing way.
There is not a guy, it is me saying.
Right, it is you. All right. Sorry for that. Thank you for that clarification. Obviously, in those ads, the Mac is played by Justin Long, a handsome young actor of great charm.
A brilliant comedian
as well,
I
should say.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, he does, which is odd because you seem to have all the funny lines, though.
That is unfortunately the fate of the comedic duo.
Yeah.
There is always a buffoon, and there is always a straight man.
Right, and he
is the
straight man.
He has said himself that the most important acting choice that he makes in those ads is when to take his hands out of his pockets.
Right.
Which is I told you he's a very funny man.
Yes, that's very funny.
Indeed.
But here's the question. So we know what they were looking for when they cast that part.
Yes.
What did they tell you they were looking for when they wanted to cast the part of the PC?
Well, they didn't really tell me much of anything.
Right.
But I gather they were looking for someone who was perhaps 37 years old, a little heavier than he used to be, a little wall-eyed. Technically, I'm not wall-eyed. I have a right hyper. My right eye is higher than my left eye. And I think that's what they were looking for.
Now, it is extraordinary to the extent to which you have become ubiquitous everywhere. You cannot not only turn on your TV, but your computer. You keep popping up on my computer in internet ads, which is disconcerting.
Yes. Well, I enjoy watching you while you work.
Thank you. But here, is, I'm going to get to this. I turn on my TV, I don't see you, I see a guy that Microsoft has hired who looks like you, who they are putting up as a defense against the implied slander of your ads.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Come on. You must have seen this.
I don't watch television. You know me. And certainly not ads. I loathe advertising.
I know. But there's a guy at Microsoft who got a job in an ad because he looks like you.
Yes, I've heard tell of such things.
I'm
very happy for him. You know, as somebody who has an accidental television career,
right.
I'm happy to see that happen to somebody else.
I see your
on
point.
Purpose.
That is so one world view.
How, and you talk about this a bit in your book, how has being a famous minor television personality, as you put it, affected your daily life, John?
Well, you may notice I'm wearing a tuxedo.
That is exciting.
Yes, very nice.
I always dress up for radio. I'm rather surprised to see that you people are not wearing tuxedos.
You know why? These guys dress up to listen at home.
That's right.
That's how fancy they
are.
They
often come in pajamas, John. Count yourself lucky. But now, because you're a literary guy and author of books, and now you walk around the streets of New York City, and I presume people go nuts to
yes,
see you.
Yes, I used to enjoy the anonymity of being a literary figure and occasionally a public radio figure.
Yes.
But now people come up to me and they point. Or they will often say, "You look like the guy in those ads."
And what do you say on that occasion?
There's a reason for that.
You should really tell him, no, I'm the guy in the Microsoft ad.
Right. I'm the guy who looks like the guy.
The fact is, I'm very self-similar. I am fractal-like.
Yes, I see.
Thank you, nerds.
Let us talk about the areas of your expertise,
yes,
of which are immense. Because
that was my old book. That was the old technology.
I'm sorry, but now we moved on to
the new technology. The upgrade is entitled "More Information Than You Require."
See, here's the thing. Your book, as you confess right up, it's all made up.
It is a book of trivia, much like the old Ripley's Believe It or Not or the Book of Lists, with the advantage that all of the amazing true facts in my book are made up by me.
I wish you had told me that before.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Can't tell you how many bets I've lost.
Well, then I better not tell you how many I've won. You should really stop betting with me on subjects covered in my own book.
You actually have a section on bar bets, actually.
Yes, I do, absolutely. For example, do you know how you... called a proposition bet.
Yes.
You go into a bar and you find someone who's having a drink with their friends, and you interrupt them, and you say, "I bet I can make this match land on its end."
Right.
And then if they don't hit you, you have a chance to prove it.
Mm-hmm.
So here's the trick. This is what you do. You take the match, and you attach a little parachute to it and put some glue on the bottom of it. And you preset that in your jacket.
Right.
And you throw it up in the air, and I would say 2 times out of 10 it works.
I'll have to try that. I was also... intrigued and somewhat frightened by your explanation of the tradition of eating oysters.
Oh, yes. Oysters. Well, let me tell you. If you enjoy a food that tastes like snot after it has been rubbed on rocks and old silverware,
yes,
then you may enjoy oysters. But do not listen to the killjoys who tell you never to eat oysters in months that do not contain the letter R, May, June, July, August, October, you know. They say that you should not eat oysters during those months because they are the warm months. They are the traditional spawning season of the oyster. And that, of course, is when the oyster tends to beg for its life while you're eating it, which some people find distracting or embarrassing for the oyster. But I say, if you're going to eat a creature alive, you have to expect some screaming. That is the carnivore's burden.
Don't you think? Well, John Hodgman, we are delighted to have you with us. We have asked you here to play a game that this time we're calling...
So you're a PC, huh? We'll see about that.
So you play a PC in
yes,
the commercials.
That is accurate.
But we've been watching them for a while, and we are beginning to suspect you're not really a PC at all. In fact, we think you're
I'm not a computer.
No,
that
no.
Is correct.
We think, in fact, you're a cruel parody of the actual machine as created by its enemies. So we're going to ask you 3 questions about the history of the Microsoft Corporation. Get 2 of these questions right, you'll win our prize for one of our listeners. Carl's voice on their home answering machine.
Damned if you do, damned if you don't.
Exactly. Carl, who is John Hodgman playing for?
John is playing for Ron Blackmore of Madison, New York.
All right.
I'm very sorry, Ron.
All right. First question. In 1976, the Young Company launched its first print advertisement in a technical journal called Digital Design. What was this advertisement? Was it A, a picture of the young Bill Gates with his shaggy hair and aviator glasses and the slogan, "He's a stud"? B, a four-panel comic strip relating, quote, "the legend of the micro kid"? Or C, a densely written description of its proprietary version of the basic computer language written specifically for the Altair personal computer?
I will say C, and here's the reason why.
Please.
Because, you know, I naturally own a lot of very old magazines. And I enjoy going to old magazines because the advertisements in those magazines tended to have thousands of words of copy in them.
They did.
Isn't that strange? Like for a perfume or a video game. For a video game, they would describe it in thousands of words. I mean, they were very wordy at the time. So that's why I'm going to say C.
I love your explanation, but in fact...
No one loved my explanation. Don't lie to me.
I'm just trying to make you feel better. The answer was B. It was a four-panel comic strip.
Oh.
The Adventures of the Micro Kid. He was a boxer, you see. He had speed and power and needed a manager, say a kind of operating system, in order to succeed.
It sounds great.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I lost. Sorry about that.
No. You still have two more chances.
Oh, okay. Very well.
Once Microsoft got going in the early 80s, it needed a corporate symbol, and it found one. A logo known in the industry as what? A, the Blibbit. B, the all-seeing eye. Or C, the exploding head.
The Blibbit.
The Blibbit?
Yes.
You're right, sir. Ah. The Blibbit. The Blibbit looked like an O drawn with horizontal lines and lasted a few years. All right, this is very exciting.
This is the tiebreaker?
This is the tiebreaker. You get this right, you win.
I look forward to that.
Microsoft was challenged in its earliest days by another upstart company you might have heard of, Apple.
Microsoft, I hear they're very good.
Well. Microsoft considered Apple, though, to be evil based on what very real evidence? A, if you typed a certain string of characters into the Apple I computer, it replied, "All hail Satan, all hail Satan."
They B, call that an Easter egg.
Yes.
B, ironic, isn't it?
B, the original price of the Apple I was $666.66. Or C, the original code name for the project that became the Macintosh, Lucifer.
The answer is B.
The answer is B. The original price was $666.66.
That is my final answer.
You are correct, sir. Very well done. Steve Jobs explained that he thought $666.66 would be an easy number to remember. I have to ask, you were so confident. Is that because as an Apple advertisement yourself, you're up on the history of Apples, or did you just happen to know?
I don't wish to brag, but I'm very intelligent. And I did, very luckily, happen to know the answer to that question.
That's amazing. Carl, how did John Hodgman do in our quiz?
Well, John's intelligence was on display here, Peter. He had two correct answers, so he wins for Ron Blackmore.
Well done! A remarkable display of last-minute brilliance.
I'm just glad for Ron Blackmore.
As are we. John Hodgman is a correspondent for The Daily Show. He's the PC on those I'm a Mac and a PC commercials. He is also the author of the excellent, hilariously funny new book, More Information Than You Require. John Hodgman! Thank you so much for joining us. Right now, panel, some more questions for you from the week's news. Amy, one of the reasons the Obama campaign ran that 30-minute infomercial on half a dozen national networks is because they've got hundreds of millions of dollars and they're running out of ways to spend it before the election. For example, on one college campus in Florida, they were able to deploy what to campaign for Obama?
On a college campus in Florida, it involves many Disney characters. No.
I'll give you a hint. It was programmed to believe that yes, it can.
One of those computing machines.
Not just
of
a computer.
It was
It was standing there in the middle of the plaza.
This space shuttle? No.
No?
No, no. No.
Now how much would you pay?
A robot?
A robot, Amy. If Florida swings to Obama, it may be pushed in the end by an Obama bot that was deployed in the central quad at the University of Florida in Gainesville. The robot deployed there held a sign saying, powered by hope. That, of course, wasn't true. It was actually powered by a cold fusion device brought back from the 24th century through the Obama campaign's time machine, which they paid for with the loose change found in the cushions of the campaign bus. The Obama campaign, in fact, has run out of ways to spend all their money. In addition to the robot, they have ordered victory T-shirts made of mink. And if Joe, they've announced this now, this is a last-minute push, if Joe Biden manages to get to Tuesday without saying something else stupid, everybody in America gets a taco. Paul.
Yeah.
Further evidence this week that we humans are a lot like our relatives, the chimpanzees, scientists discovered that chimps keep or maintain what?
A grudge?
No. Yes!
Really?
Yeah, they have grudges. We read about it. It was put in the form of the chimps maintain an enemies list. Scientists in Germany studied the behavior of chimps for over 3,000 hours. They noticed that those furry primates were actually vindictive bastards. It all comes down to grooming. Chimps keep close track over time of nitpickers and those who don't pick nits. I.e., you pick my nits, I'll pick yours. You don't pick my nits, you're dead to me.
Which, by the way, was a scene on The Sopranos,
yeah.
I think.
Right. That's when Paulie picked Tony's nits.
Right.
Swore allegiance.
And then whacked him.
Paula.
Yeah.
Paula, being an astronaut can be a lonely experience. You're stuck in space for long stretches of time with the same people. Well, in an effort to make things better, NASA is creating what for astronauts? Isolation. Difficulty.
Feelings of isolation in space. I got a big I told
Loneliness.
You so coming on that one.
Isolation,
you
depression,
know, how many
anxiety.
People didn't say to them, you know, you're going to go up there, you're going to be alone. Be trapped in a little room with only a couple of people for I don't know how long, you might get lonely. What are they creating? I'd say a rec room.
Something nice and paneled.
Yeah, it's a little foosball, you know.
I'll give you a hint.
Yeah.
Tell me about your mother, Dave.
Oh, they're creating a therapist robot?
Yes, a computerized therapist for space.
Oh, man, that's a great idea.
You can't do traditional therapy in space because it takes 40 minutes to receive the transmission. You know, it's like...
And the hour only lasts for 50.
I know, it's terrible.
And plus, in space, no one can hear you scream.
So NASA is developing the Virtual Space Station, a computer program that features a recorded video therapist designed to help astronauts cope with life in space.
You know what?
What?
If you can't be stimulated and interested and distracted from your inner thoughts long enough in space... I've been sitting here in a chair feeling bad about myself.
I feel so small and insignificant.
Coming up, it's lightning fill in the blank, but first it's time for Carl to recreate some more voices from the week's news. If you'd like to play on air, call or leave a message at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. Or you can send an email to waitwait@npr.org. You can also go to our website at waitwait.npr.org, where you can find out about attending our weekly live shows here at the Chase Auditorium in Chicago, and podcasts. You can get podcasts for your computer or MP3 player, and you can visit the NPR shop to pick up your Wait Wait tchotchkes. Hi, you're on Wait Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Oh, hi.
Oh, hi.
Hey, Peter.
How are you?
I'm fine. This is Lindsay Hauser.
Hey, Lindsay, how are you?
I'm good.
Where are you calling from?
La Crescenta, California.
Where the heck is La Crescenta?
It's between the San Gabriel Mountains and the Verdugo Mountains.
Oh!
Yeah, that's right.
All right, look, I don't want to call in an airstrike on you. I just want to know where you live.
Well, we are called the balcony of Southern California. We're between Glendale and Pasadena.
Oh, that's better. So you're north. You look down upon it. The great Southern.
And about $30 cheaper than the orchestra of Southern California.
Yeah. That's important.
The balcony seat.
That's great.
Yeah.
Well, Lindsay, nice to have you with us. You're going to play Who's Carl this time. Carl Castle will read three quotes from this week's news. If you can correctly identify or explain just two of them, Carl will record the greeting on your home answering device. Ready to play?
I'm ready.
Here you go. Here's your first quote.
In Delaware, you're allowed to adopt someone younger than you. You're allowed to adopt someone older than you. I'm available for adoption.
So that, delivered at an old age home, was yet another off-the-cuff remark from a politician who's been told to refrain from his rhetorical flourishes lately. Who?
Joe Biden.
Right. So remember when we all expected that the vice presidential candidate would be an endless source of gaffes? Well, the Obama campaign expected it too and took precautions. Biden has not taken questions from voters since he said Hillary Clinton might have been a better pick for VP. He hasn't chatted with supporters since contradicting Obama's energy policy. He hasn't worked the phones much since he told one voter, quote, keep the faith, or as my grandmother would say, spread it, unquote. His infamous prediction that an Obama presidency would inspire a, quote, test by foreign leaders was the last straw. Biden has now been fitted with a shock collar that zaps him whenever he deviates from the teleprompter.
He does say some goofy things.
He also said, and this is also true, he said, this election is all about one three-letter word, J-O-B-S. Here is your next quote.
He's a complicated guy with a very dynamic personality. He can sing, and obviously he has a strong political point of view.
That was a PR guy named Jim Della Croce. He was talking about a man who might be trading in his pipes and toilets for a recording studio. An even greater fame than he has now. Who?
Could it be Joe the Plumber?
It is Joe the Plumber.
No.
This
he's everywhere.
Week, Joe the Plumber, the most famous symbolic political mammal since Checkers the Dog, got himself a manager and a publicist, and
almost immediately there
was talk about endorsement deals, a book deal, and a, quote, possible record deal with a major label. He's going to sing country songs. Joe was everywhere this week. He was stumping for candidates. He was weighing in on foreign policy issues. He told Fox News he agreed that a vote for Barack Obama is a vote for the death of Israel. Joe was so busy, he even, and this is the sad thing, he even started standing up his old friends. Listen to this.
Joe's with us today. Joe, where are you? Where is Joe? Is Joe here with us today? Joe, I thought you were here today. All right. Well, you're all Joe the Plumber, so all of you stand up and say, I thank you.
That was John McCain, of course, the man who created Joe the Plumber.
Boy.
Finding out what loyalty means.
Well, you know, Joe the Plumber, he told him he would be there between 9 and 3.
All right, very good. Here is your last quote.
I'm very scared to do it. What if I don't come back? With the whole light years thing, what if I come back 10,000 years later and everyone I know is dead? I'd be like, great. Now I have to start all over.
That was someone expressing her well-found apprehension about agreeing to go into space as one of the first passengers aboard Richard Branson's new rocket ship. Who?
Well, my first two answers were Joe, so I'm going to say Josie someone. No?
Out of all the kinds of logic used in our show, that may be the most original. That's right, you figured out the clue for this week's show. All the answers are Joe. No, actually, although
it's like a cross stick this week.
No, I'll give you a hint. In space, no one can tell how hot you are.
Okay, wait, it's someone that could be hot.
It's someone who is famously hot.
Famously.
Or not. Yeah, she thinks everything
is not hot.
Yeah.
Oh, Paris Hilton.
Yes, of course.
Oh, thank you.
You're welcome.
She's not Joe. Okay, yeah. Paris.
Typically, astronauts have to go through years of physical and mental testing before going up into space. We know why. But Paris Hilton bypassed all that after she promised to make the journey in an aluminum foil bikini. Hilton is one of many celebs, including William Shatner and Sigourney Weaver, who have signed up for the first commercial spaceflight set to launch sometime in the next few years. If the mission is successful, we can all look forward one day to watching a homemade video featuring Paris Hilton and a Wookiee. Carl, how did Lindsay do in our quiz?
Well, Lindsay had three correct answers, Peter, so she wins our prize.
Well done, Lindsay.
Well, thank you.
Thank you. Yeah. Congratulations. Well done. Now on to our final game, Lightning Fill-in-the-Blank. Each of our players will have 60 seconds in which to answer as many fill-in-the-blank questions as he or she can. Each correct answer now worth 2 points. Carl, can you give us the scores?
Paula Poundstone has the lead, Peter. She has 4 points. Paul Provenza has 3. Amy Dickinson has 2.
All right. Amy, you're in third place. You're up first. The clock will start when I begin. Your first question, fill-in-the-blank. Election officials express concerns that glitches with blanks may lead to irregularities next Tuesday.
Ballots?
Yeah, voting machines. On Wednesday, a 6.4 magnitude earthquake hit southwestern blank.
Pakistan?
Right. Airline security officials announced that restrictions against carrying blanks on planes would likely be lifted in 2009.
Lighters?
No.
Guns,
liquids.
Knives?
Liquids, no. A statement on the Al-Qaeda website announced that the group is endorsing blank for president.
Barack Obama?
No, McCain.
Oh!
An Australian man was arrested after driving drunk in order to blank.
Get a ticket.
No, he had to go to the police station and complain about a drunk driving charge. Best known for his Navajo-based tribal police mystery novels, blank died in New Mexico at 83.
Tony Hillerman?
Right. A high-speed train to Paris was delayed for 2 hours after a passenger blanked.
Had a baby.
Got his arm stuck in the toilet. The 26-year-old man probably thought things could not get much worse when he dropped his cell phone into the train toilet. But that's before he found himself trapped by the toilet's powerful suction action. According to witnesses, the man with toilet still attached had to be removed for the train on a stretcher before train service could begin again. Carl, how did Amy do?
Oh, Lord.
Amy had 3 correct answers for 6 more points. She now has 8 points, and Amy has the lead.
Oh, well, I'm enjoying it.
Yes.
Now.
All right.
Oh.
Paul, you're up next. Fill in the blank. Roads were closed, and people in parts of the Northeast lost power after the first blank of the season.
Snowstorm.
Right. The White House urged banks and other financial companies to stop hoarding and begin blanking again.
Making loans.
Right. Lending money. The United States closed its embassy in blank amid tensions between the two countries after a U.S. air raid.
Syria.
Right. Researchers announced this week that the smell of blanks helps regulate blood pressure in mice.
Flatulence.
Right. Gerard Damiano, the director of the 70s porn movie Blank, died at age 80.
Deep throat.
Right. Amy Poehler gave birth.
Now you're on my long suit.
Amy Poehler gave birth to her first child last Saturday and said she will not return to blank.
Saturday Night Live.
Right. Police in Bismarck, North Dakota easily caught a diner who didn't pay her bill at Applebee's because she left a blank on the table.
A business card?
No, a filled-out comment card with her real name on it. The woman dutifully filled out the comment card, what she thought of the food, the service, with her full name, before skipping out on the bill for $77.64.
Did she like it, at least?
Well, yes.
It's really good.
She
did. So good, I'm not paying.
She really rated Applebee's very high, which they say will help with her eventual defense of insanity. Carl, how did Paul do?
Paul had 6 correct answers for 12 more points, and Paul now has 15 points and the lead.
Whoa.
All right.
I don't know how Paul squeaked past my 8 points.
That's amazing. Yeah. But here's the big question, and I always love asking this question on the occasions I get to ask it. How many does Paula Poundstone need to win?
6 correct answers.
6, Paula.
Why don't I just tell you everything I know? See if it happens to fit into a minute.
Here we go. This is for the game, Paula. Fill in the blank.
Yeah.
On Wednesday, the Federal Reserve cut a key blank by 0.5 point.
Interest rate.
Right. 2 white supremacists were arrested in Tennessee over their alleged plot against blank.
Obama.
Right. After getting approval from the U.S. Justice Department, Northwest Airlines officially merged with blank.
Delta?
Right. This week, doctors in Britain performed a life-saving hernia operation on blank.
Oh, the chihuahua from that movie.
You're so close. An angelfish named Carla. Jermaine, Michael, and the rest of the brothers will all be involved when the blank reunites for a tour in 2009.
Jackson 5.
Right, German police are baffled after traffic cameras appeared to show blank driving erratically around the country.
Tank.
No, a Muppet. It's not easy waiting for green. A British driver has evaded police by propping a stuffed Muppet, specifically the drummer Animal.
Oh, I love him.
I know, in the passenger seat of his Audi while zipping through red lights all over the country. Now, you see, German traffic cameras are set up to photograph the driver, who is, of course, on the left side of the car, but he's driving a British car, so he's on the right. He put the Muppet on the left to distract the cameras.
Wow.
Quote, we suspect he positions Animal deliberately before accelerating past the camera, said a German officer. Animal said in response, you try driving with a hand up your tuchus. Carl, did Paula do well enough to win?
Paula needed 6 correct answers. She had just 4. With 15 points, Paul Provenza is this All week's right. champion.
In just a minute, we'll ask our panelists, how will Barack Obama spend the rest of his campaign millions before Election Day? But first, let me tell you that support for NPR comes from ATO Records and My Morning Jacket, whose album Evil Urges is available now at Barnes & Noble and barnesandnoble.com. The William and Flora Hewlett Foundation, making grants to solve social and environmental problems at home and around the world. On the web at hewlett.org, and ESPN presenting Black Magic on basketball's African American pioneers who forced dramatic social change on DVD today. Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is a production of NPR and Chicago Public Radio in association with Urgent Haircut Productions. Doug Berman, executive producer. B.J. Lederman composed our theme. Our program is directed by Melody Kramer and produced by Emily Ecton. The senior producer of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is Mike Danforth. Now, panel, how will Barack Obama spend all his campaign cash? Paul Provenza.
He's just going to dangle it in front of John McCain and go, I don't even need it.
Amy Dickinson.
We're all going, that's all 250 million of us, to Disney World.
And Paula Poundstone.
As the first step towards reuniting Americans, he'll buy the red leather jacket and donate it back to Sarah Palin.
Well, if Barack Obama does any of those things, panel, we'll ask you about it on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Thank you, Carl Castle. Thanks also to Paul Provenza, Amy Dickinson, Paula Poundstone. Thanks to all of you for listening. I am Peter Sagal. We'll see you next week at the City Center for the Performing Arts in Boston. This is NPR, National Public Radio.